It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
This is Cash Wampum welcoming you back to another episode of Horror 101 Podcast, where we are educating your fears. Just got back from a few weeks vacation, which is why this show took a little bit longer to get out to you. Spent a week in Cuba with my wife and some friends, got a nice tan, took the sunglasses, left the coat at home. Last we met, five of us presented a movie for you, REC, the Spanish movie from 2007 that scared the hell out of all of us. And I'm pleased to say that we got some good feedback on that show, and we actually reached a few people who watched it and had the shit scared right out of them. That's right. That's what we like to hear. That's what we're all about here. It's educating your fears. And this time around, we're going to change gears a little and focus on a movie that we've all seen over on this end. We usually pick a title that one or more of us at Horror 101 haven't seen so we can get a fresh perspective on the title. But tonight, we're bringing you a horror film that we all fell in love with at a very young age. When we started this project, there was a string of films that we knew we would have to cover at some point. And there's no time like the present. How many of you like a good ghost story? And I'm not talking the Paranormal Activity kind of story. I'm talking about a story that will leave you cold and think that the Banshee is ready to come for you. It's not the dark that scares us, it's not knowing what's in the dark with us, ah. Now there's the problem. And this time around, the world-famous Brian Stewart, the lovely nude, and myself would like to exploit that fear with a little gem from 1980 that we're proud to say is Canadian. Starring George C. Scott, Trish Van Devere, and Melvin Douglas, this is a movie that is a shining example of everything done right with a haunted house story, and it's even based on true events from the 1960s. We hope you enjoy The Changeling.
You know, there's some question about your lease, Mr. Russell.
Why should anyone object?
That house is not fit to live in. No one's been able to live in it. It doesn't want people.
And there has been trouble in the house before.
This is probably one of my favorite ghost story movies, like haunted house ghost story movies,
yeah.
You know? And this isn't the 2008 fucking...
2010.
Well, you know the one I'm talking about?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie, not that Changeling. So I knew as soon as... As soon as that movie, The Changeling, came out, it would bury this movie further into obscurity.
It swept under the rug. This is one that set the bar for every haunted house movie that was to follow.
Well, I don't know, because 1973, 7 years before it, you had the...
You think Amityville Horror?
No. Amityville was 1979. 73, we went through this one. It was Legend of Hell House.
Legend of Hell House, yeah. Belasco House. Hell House.
Hell House.
Directed by Peter Medak, who's one of my favorite directors, and is a director that I doubt any of our listeners have ever heard of. No, in fact, probably because he struggled his entire life going back and forth from having to do television work and then back into film work, and then he'd fall back into... this is a guy who basically directed episodes for every major television series during the 80s. He's directed episodes of House, Breaking Bad. There is something about the way Medak picks these disturbing, jarring little details that your brain just can't process. It's like, this is wrong. And he's very meticulous about the way he sets a scene up. He likes little details, and he doesn't need much to make you look at something and go, this is fucked up. You know, he is quite an artist. He was actually the original director on Cujo before he got replaced.
Oh, really?
He had started shooting, and by the time they moved from one location of shooting to the next major city, the producers had already replaced him with... I can't think of it now.
See,
where's Nick?
Where's Nick? We fucking
Nick,
need him.
I blame you.
Nude? Consult the Oracle Nick's not here to do it.
Shame on you, Nick.
Louis Teague,
okay.
So this movie was the first film to win Best Picture in the Canadian Film Awards after its name was changed to The Genie. So this was the first winner of the Best Picture Genie Award.
Yeah.
The Changeling actually cleaned up a lot of Genie Awards that year. Because it's Canadian, Best Foreign Actor and Actress went to George C. Scott and Trish Vandeveer. It won Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Design, Best Cinematography by John Coquillon, Best Sound, Best Sound Editing. A few other points of note, this film was number 54 on Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments, and Martin Scorsese placed The Changeling on his list of 11 scariest horror films of all time.
This is a film that a whole family could sit down and really kind of get creeped out with together, because there's no gore, there's no nudity,
Yeah. There's
nothing that's going to make you throw the kids out and say, okay, that's it, we don't want you to watch any more of this. It's just a riveting ghost story. It's a mystery, it's a whodunit, it's all these things wrapped up in one.
It's a great character study, too, because his character is really complex. I mean, how many people in these movies do we get to see their background story before they get to the haunted house? What their life is about, the pain and trials and tribulations, what they're going through. Because it's as much about his suffering as it is about the suffering of this ghost.
It's a very smart movie. Let's watch the fucking...
All right.
So if you're looking for a gore fest, The Changeling is not for you. If you want a lot of cheap scares and fast-paced horror, you'll want to find something different. But if you're in the mood for something compelling, with a well-paced, smart story with genuine chills, The Changeling is right up your alley. I'm going to suggest that this movie is not going to appeal to viewers between the age of 10 to 30. Modern audiences are more accustomed to a conventional horror formula that doesn't require a lot of investment in story or character. In order to appreciate a gem like The Changeling, you need that patience. This is an old-school kind of movie, and it demonstrates how less is more when it comes to the horror elements. The Changeling opens with music composer John Russell witnessing a tragic accident that takes the lives of his wife and daughter. A few months later, he moves across the country to Denver, where he attempts to get on with his life, still very much scarred by his recent loss. When he reaches his destination, he rents an old giant mansion where he can work on his music. Soon after he moves in, things start going bump in the night. Instead of running from a series of paranormal occurrences, John finds himself trying to rationalize the situation. With the help from Claire, a lady from the historical society that rented the house to him, John begins to unravel a 70-year-old scandal that includes murder and deception, a mystery that an unrested spirit in that house is determined to bring to light.
She said the house didn't want people. She's mistaken. Whatever it is trying desperately to communicate. The bangings, the water taps, the broken window panes, all the glass fell outward. It had to be done from the inside. Everything that's happened has been designed to get me into that attic room.
George C. Scott being the star of this was a perfect casting move, because George C. Scott always used to play a heavy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was Patton, for Christ's sake.
He was, you know, General Buck Turgidson.
He was always a stalwart, like Jack Nicholson, if you will, you know what I mean? Like this unmovable mountain of an actor that was
a big guy. Like,
exactly.
He's like, what, 6'4"?
And in this movie, he's very, I wouldn't say meek, but he's...
He's damaged.
He's damaged, he's vulnerable.
He actually is quite shaken by this. And at the same time, he also, you can see that he gets frustrated too, because like, what is this thing? He's trying to rationalize all of these events, because there's some force in this house. And he's like, it's trying to communicate, what is it trying to say? And it's so frustrating because... I mean, we all get to that point. When we're on edge, we're also partly pissed off, right? And he conveys that perfectly. Like, he is at both times unnerved and angry because he can't rationalize what's going on. He doesn't. It's like there's all these pieces to a puzzle, and he can't get them to fit. And he's like, "What do I do?" You know, I mean, there's something out there crying out for attention and help. And at the same time, he's an artist. He's a musician, right? He's there practicing his piano and writing his music.
He's a doctor of music.
That's right. And so there's a part of him, I think, that really feels for whatever this being is, this entity, that really wants to figure it out.
What's the best part of a haunted house movie? Some would argue it's the haunting itself, but I always loved the house. With some great set designing, masterful camera work, and a great story, the house in The Changeling seems to come alive and become a character in the story.
Last show, you guys spent a few moments talking about how creepy, nude, and my house is.
Yes.
This house here, every time I watch this movie, I always think to myself, I would fucking love to live in this house. You know, the old architecture, the big rooms, the high ceilings, the chandeliers, the long staircases with the hardwood floors.
The old turn of the century wheelchairs.
The antechambers, the double doors, the French doors, just wonderful old Victorian architecture. And what a perfect setting for a haunted house movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The other thing I like too is that from outside the house, it has a very symmetrical look. It has the railing, the windows, the two front pieces of the house. It's all perfectly balanced, right? It's a perfectly even looking house. Once you get into the house, none of that interior design makes any sense. It's not symmetrical at all. Staircases will appear out of nowhere. Remember when you walk into the room where the music room was? They had that one staircase that's just in the middle of that one room that just goes up to like a kind of half landing thing. I mean, what is that? Where does that go? There's never just a plain, ordinary, straight hallway that disappears into an even vanishing point. Never happens. And this house is very nightmarish. I mean, it really works.
I love a movie where the setting is a character, and The Changeling is a brilliant example of that happening.
I mean, that's the textbook definition of true gothic horror. In gothic fiction, it's all about the location, the setting, the atmosphere. The other thing that works so well is because he's a musician composing for piano, you get those beautiful, long, resonating piano chords just echoing through the house. Those solitary, lonely notes that he's sitting there banging away on the piano. And it really does make the house seem huge, empty, and foreboding. I mean, it's beautiful.
But would you want to live there?
No. Hell no.
I would.
No, absolutely.
Oh, dude, I'd be in there in a second.
You live there now.
Maybe not quite as large. I love the that breeze soundtrack, that like wind coming through the curtains or something like that.
Yeah.
That's like the camera pans a bit and you hear that noise, and that's all you need.
Just the sound of wind.
That's right.
Ask anyone who's seen The Changeling before, and I'll guarantee that they'll all say that at one point they were absolutely terrified by something as simple as a bouncing red children's ball.
Never gonna look at a red Indian ball ever.
And we all used to have them, you know. But I mean, it's just every little detail. Even when the first time we hear the ball, it starts off as a slow bounce, and then it picks up speed as it gains momentum down the stairs, and it starts beating faster and faster.
That's because it's losing its height in the bounce as it comes down. It's if you bounce a ball like that, if you drop it from 5 feet up, it'll bounce maybe 3.5 feet, come down, bounce maybe 2 feet, bounce 1.5 feet, bounce, and then each bounce will get, as gravity does its job.
It's just, just beautiful, beautiful stuff. You know, you'll see staples of this movie in future films. I'm sure everyone who watches The Changeling will say, oh, I've already seen that before, that's been done before, but they'll be looking at it backwards. You know, because this movie started so many trends. Like Helen was saying earlier, every time you see a, you know, an old-fashioned wheelchair, or every time you see that rubber ball, we've all seen that rubber ball thing done 100 freaking times. But, I mean, really, go out and see this movie and try to forget everything you've seen in previous horror. Just watch it and, you know, be prepared to give it the credit it's due.
A lot of ghostly things happen to John Russell while he's in this Chessman Park house. But the bouncing ball incident is what drives him to get help from the Paranormal Research Society. And a medium comes over and holds a seance to try and get more information from whatever spirit's in that house. Now, I've seen a lot of seances in horror films, okay? The Gates of Hell, The Uninvited, Legend of Hell House, Night of the Demons, Tomb of Lysia, The Haunting. None of them comes even close to the power that the seance in The Changeling gives you.
You've suffered a cruel loss, John Russell. You've lost a wife and child. The presence in this house is reaching out to you through that loss. The presence is very strong. It is a child's presence, a child who is not at peace, who cannot rest. The presence is with us.
And the seance is in two parts, you know what I mean? Like, if they'd have just stopped after the auto writing, I would have been like, wow, that was great. But then they continue to phase two.
Joseph, did you die in this house?
And then the glass goes flying off, scaring everyone. And then all of a sudden, again, it goes from six people in the room to a cut, and all of a sudden, again, he's alone in that house right after that.
You feel terrified, too, because all of a sudden he's safe when he's in numbers, right, mm-hmm. when it's being revealed. But the real truth of it, the actual hard reality of what he experienced, he revisits that alone. And he feels absolutely vacant in that room. That cut scene and everyone's gone. You're like, whoa, where'd everyone go? Because that was our safety net, too.
And then he's listening to the voice and he's asking, how did you die? How did you die? How did you die? And then the camera starts traveling through the house and it shows him. You want to know?
Yeah.
This is how it went down.
Every time he plays back the seance, when he's going back through the tape recording and he keeps playing that sound of the ghost over and over again, and when he realizes he's actually listening to Joseph and he can't believe what he's hearing, then all of a sudden that's when he gets panicky. That's when he has to call his friend. You know, he has to call the realtor there, the woman who rented the house, and he's in such a state, and all of a sudden now you feel like poor George Scott really is alone and vulnerable in this huge, empty, haunted house, you know?
I always found that the scene that freaks me out quite a bit, other than the seance, because we all know that that's great, is when she's already upset because she's listening to the tape and she's hearing the spectral child tell her story and she's heartbroken,
right.
You know, that what she's hearing, and he's saying, well, this is what's happened, this is what I'm thinking, and she just says, stop it, I can't listen to this anymore, and she storms away, and then all of a sudden she's stopped dead in her tracks, like
that look on her face,
just she's looking up the stairs at something and she is terrified, absolutely terrified,
she is paralyzed,
and we're like, what the fuck is she looking at?
Stop it.
And we're waiting as he approaches her, and we know, okay, as soon as he gets to her, he's going to look up and see what she's looking at. If you've never seen this movie before, you're like, what the fuck is at the top of the stairs?
It still scares me to see that look on her face.
Yeah.
And I know it's up there.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, even the acting is spot on. Trish Van Deer, really, every scene she's in, when she shows fear, it's never extreme, over-the-top, ridiculous fear. It looks like genuine hysteria, like real panic, real genuine, you know, trembling, like the tears, the way her voice breaks, it all seems perfectly genuine. You know, it doesn't seem like somebody acting like they're scared. It looks like somebody who actually just saw a ghost.
Trish Van Derveer is actually quite charming in The Changeling, and I'd like to tell you that this was her only oh shit moment while in the Chessman house, but I'd be lying. We'll get to that later. Earlier in the film, John uncovers a hidden room in the attic containing a music box, a diary from 1909, and the creepiest child's wheelchair you've ever seen. With these clues and the evidence from the seance, John now has enough information to begin solving a very old and savage plot of murder and greed. If you love the Nancy Drew shit, then you'll have a great time sinking your teeth into this story. Now, I mentioned The Changeling was based on real events. The writer of the original story, Russell Hunter, claims to have rented a mansion on the edge of Chessman Park in Denver, 1968. Almost immediately after moving in, poltergeist activity started around him. Doors banging, walls vibrating, the usual. At some point, Russell met a man that no one could identify, who claimed there was a hidden room on the third floor of the house concealed in the back of a second floor closet. Sure enough, he found this hidden stairway up to a room that contained items very similar to the ones found in the movie. After this, a seance was held in the house, and his version of events that followed are very much like in The Changeling, so I don't want to spoil the mystery for you. Having said that, I'm always very leery of these so-called true event movies, especially when it's just one person substantiating their own story. The horror genre has been a magnet for this kind of boast, just to sell tickets. The Amityville Horror is probably the wildest example of that kind of supernatural sensationalism. So my instinct tells me that the ghostly inclusions of Russell's story are fabricated. But the facts I've uncovered about the grounds where the house once stood is on record and most interesting. Chessman Park was once the first organized cemetery in Denver called Mount Prospect. Most sources agree that the first man to be buried there was Jack O'Neill, who died in a gunfight on March 30, 1859. In 1890, U.S. Congress decided the graves and bodies should be moved to build a park, and they were going to call it Congress Park. An undertaker named E.P. McGovern was the lowest bidder on the job to relocate the bodies. He was to be paid $1.90 for each body moved to Riverside Cemetery. But he discovered greater profits could be made by hacking up the bodies and bones and stuffing the remains into child-sized caskets rather than caskets made for adults, and sometimes using the same casket for more than one body. This horrid work was started March 14, 1893, and the work was done in such haste, McGovern's crew were leaving parts of bodies on the sidewalks, graves were looted, jewels were stolen. These matters were reported and photographed in the Denver Republican newspaper on March 19, 1893 in an article called The Work of Ghouls. Naturally, after the article came out, they got their shit together and the park was eventually built. Congress Park was renamed Chessman Park in 1909 after the widow of a popular philanthropist, Walter Scott Chessman, donated a pavilion in his honor to the city of Denver. Now, if that isn't enough reason for a lot of pissed off spirits to be hovering around Chessman Park to this day, then here's the icing on the cake. The grounds that Denver originally turned into Mount Prospect back in 1859 was the site of an old, ancient Arapaho burial ground, and none of those native remains were moved before Mount Prospect became a cemetery. Is any of this sounding familiar?
Son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you? You son of a bitch, you left the bodies and you only moved the headstones! You only moved the headstones! Why?
Why? So here we have two cemeteries defiled on one site, and the story doesn't end there. Although the Chessman Park house that Russell claimed was haunted was torn down in 1970, there's been a report as recent as 2010 that workers on the Chessman Park irrigation system found four more bodies that were never moved. This was in November 1st, 2010, ABC News article titled, Skeletons from Old Cemetery Unearthed in Chessman Park.
I love it when the truth is stranger than fiction. Now, where were we? Oh, yes, Trish Vandeveer all alone in that dark, spooky, haunted house.
But I do not wish to leave you down in that awful place, all alone.
You think the bouncing ball was bad? You ain't seen nothing yet.
John?
John? Where are you?
When she's going through the house and the spirit is mimicking different things that John has said through the movie, you know what I mean?
Like, what do you want?
What do you want from me? But it's all like off in the distance and it's luring her up to that third floor.
John?
Well, he's using what he has because he has no voice of his own. It was all captured on tape. Mm-hmm. But you can't hear his voice, right? So he's using what voice has already echoed through the house.
John, please, I don't want to come up there. John?
I've asked a lot of people throughout the years what their most frightening experience during a movie was, and a lot of them have answered the changeling when the wheelchair comes alive.
One piano note, a bouncing ball, and an archaic child's wheelchair. Those three things right there are the grand MacGuffins of this movie. And that's all you have, and those three items right there.
It's a repetitive banging sound, and we can't tell you what it is, but you will hear this sound, this thumping sound, repeatedly over and over again. And that's part of the joy of the film, is that these elements aren't just random spooky noises that you would see in a lot of haunted house films that are just there to scare you, and they're just all chaotic and they don't make much sense. Every element to this movie is there for a reason. They are all part of a real mystery. And so when you find out what the banging is, what the ball is for, why the wheelchair, and it's terrifying. It really is. Even when all the pieces are put together, the actual story itself of what happened is chilling.
She said she'd seen a boy, very small, very thin, and he was trying to come up through the floor. And he kept staring at her.
The seance, the ball, the wheelchair. Any other movie that I've seen after I've seen this movie, which I've seen several times, if I see a bouncing ball, I immediately think the changeling. If I see a wheelchair, like an old one, even a child in a wheelchair, I immediately think the changeling. Any type of seance, whether it's a very modern movie, an older movie, automatically my thoughts go to seance. It's always a comparative, because nothing really matches or measures up to those three items from this movie.
I mean, it was definitely influential. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many horror directors after this point, and it has to be an homage. I mean, it can't be a coincidence, right? They have to be saying, this is the movie that got me into film, right? This is the one that impressed me.
Look at this wheelchair.
Oh, my God. It's so small.
Medic is such a meticulous selector of jarring details. He picks the elements of this film so perfectly. And for those of you who have seen The Others, the Alejandro Amenábar film, and by the way, that director cites this movie as one of his all-time great favorite films. There's a seance movie in The Others. It is, for those of you who have seen it and like that movie, is page for page taking their notes from The Changeling. It owes everything to The Changeling.
John. Help. 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 John, help. Help.
Our hats off to cinematographer John Coquillon. This man filmed four movies with Vincent Price, including classics like The Witchfinder General and The Oblong Box. He also shot Strog Dogs with Dustin Hoffman, and you can tell after watching The Changeling that this man had a lot of talent with the camera.
I love how the camera travels in this movie. Like, it's such a huge house and large staircases and big rooms, and the camera just travels so smooth throughout all of this and just tracks so perfectly.
Yeah.
It's really good cinematography.
Yeah, it was one of the best looking horror films. And one of the things I love is just how much the cinematographer and Peter Medak allow darkness to bleed over almost the entire visual aspect. I mean, modern horror, it's about showing you everything, showing you all the gory details. This movie is not about that. It's about leaving you just a pinprick of light, and it's like you're threatened of almost being completely enveloped by the darkness itself.
What is it in that house, Claire? What is it doing? Why is it trying to reach me?
John.
Is it because of my daughter? I can't go through all this again.
John, you must get out of that house.
Is such a perfectly woven mystery story. It is absolutely flawless.
Score it.
Oh, it's a 10. It's an absolute 10. I mean, you'll never, if you're looking for a more perfect haunted house thriller, ghost story, mystery, you're not going to find it.
Nude?
Oh, 10, absolutely.
I'll give it a 9.5. I think the casting was great. I love the score. I love the house. I love the subtlety of the haunting. It doesn't go over the top.
Yeah.
If a movie wants to crescendo, I'm all for that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think a good movie should do that. You should have a thrilling final act. But don't get too stupid. You know what I mean? Don't go over the top. Because if you go over the top, you can never come back. You can't come back from over the top. You can't do it.
It builds perfectly. The pace is genius. It starts so simply with just that one note on the piano. And just a little more, then it's just a door opening, and it builds nicely, you know? It doesn't rush into anything, and once it gets going, it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Goddamn son of a bitch. What is it you want? What do you want from me? I've done everything I can do! There's nothing more to do.
And there's the end of another show. We hope you'll find The Changeling and check it out. It's definitely worth your while. It's currently only available on DVD or VHS if you're still holding on to that beautiful old tech. We feel The Changeling needs the Blu-ray treatment. It certainly deserves it. Like my friends say, when you watch General Patton being scared, you can't help but be frightened yourself. We held a Facebook poll a few weeks back asking which title you think we should cover next, and it looks like Return of the Living Dead is at the forefront, followed closely by Nightbreed. Decisions, decisions. Thanks again for listening, and as always, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's gonna scare the hell out of you, and we're gonna help you find it, right here on Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.